Mahi, one of the castle, welcomes this very important event that is being organized by the Ahlul Bayt Islamic Mission. In today's society, many argue that the concepts of Taqlid and Murji'iyah are backward, are in need of urgent reformation, and necessarily need to be changed in turn with the times. While others believe and contend that Taqlid and Murji'iyah, these are concepts that are sacred, they're concepts that necessarily need to be safeguarded for the foreseeable future. Some argue that it is not necessary in today's day and age to follow a jurist, whereas others very sufferously argue that without Taqlid and Murji'iyah, we as Muslims cannot function even for the purposes of our day-to-day actions such as Salah and such like. So of course, therefore, this title is very aptly been suggested as Taqlid. Why should we follow a jurist? Of course, the speaker, the scholar that we have the honor of being in the presence of this evening needs no introduction, but I'll say a few words. Sheikh Muhammad Said Abdul is currently head of research at the Islamic Center of England and formerly principal of the London-based Higher Education Institution, the Islamic College. Inshallah, he'll commence his discussion. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا وحبيبنا حبيب إله العالمين محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. The term تقليد may be a wrong word used for a rational practice. Taqlid, in one sense, is a reprehensible act. We are strongly advised in the Quran that do not imitate anyone. We have to find the truth by our own rational understanding. Taqlid is condemned in the Quran vehemently, based on tradition, imitating forefathers, imitating others just out of respect, imitating others because we ourselves are incapable of understanding. These types of taqlid are, of course, condemned. In the Quran, it's reprehensible rationally. As human beings, every individual has the capacity, the average capacity to understand, to learn. So why should we imitate? And many verses in the Quran tells us that imitation or taqlid is wrong. Like for example, in Surah Zukhruf, we have that when Musa came to his people, or when the prophets went to their people, they said that inna wajadna aba'ana ala ummatin wa kadhalika ma arsalna fi qaryatin min nadhirin illa qalu inna wajadna aba'ana ala ummatin. We always, when we sent a prophet to a people, they said we are following our forefathers, we have found them on a tradition, on a sunnah, on a manners. وَإِنَّ عَلَىٰ آثَارِهِمْ مُهْتَدُونَ. And we are guided by their guidance, by their practice. We do what they did. We imitate what they used to do. And then they said, وَكَذَلِكَ مَا أَرْسَلْنَا فِي أُمَّةٍ مِّنْ قَرْيَةٍ إِلَّا قَالُوا إِنَّا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا عَلَىٰ أُمَّةٍ وَإِلَّا عَلَىٰ آثَارِهِمْ مُقْتَدُونَ. The following verse says that we are doing iqtida. Iqtida is just taqlid, is imitating. We are doing iqtida to what our forefathers used to do. So Allah condemns them. And the response is very interesting. He says, قَالَ أَوَلَوْ جِئْتُكُمْ بِأَحْدَى مِمَّا وَجَدْتُمْ عَلَيْهَا أَبَاكُمْ. What if I bring you something which is more insightful, more fruitful, than what your fathers were doing, more rational. Well, of course, they said, إِنَّا بِمَا أُرْسَلْتُمْ بِهِ كَافِرُ. We do not follow you. We are kafir to whatever you bring to us. So it's condemned, and this is not the only verse, in many, many other verses. Especially about Ibrahim when he asks his people, what, مَا هَذِهِ التَّمَاثِيلُ الَّتِي أَنْتُمْ لَهَا عَاكِفُونَ. What are these idols, these statues that you are worshipping them, isolating yourself before them, paying tribute to them? قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا كَذَلِكَ يَفْعَلُونَ or وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا لَهَا عَابِدِينَ in many different verses. We found our forefathers doing the same thing, so we are following them. So this is quite reprehensible, and Quran actually condemns this. This is imitation. However, there's another concept which Quran, again, the Quran advises us as rational people to practice, and that is, if we do not know something, to refer to those who know. This is not imitation. This is not taqlid in that sense. This is turning towards someone who knows better than us. And this is a rational thing that all of us do. We educate our children so that we convey to them our knowledge, our experience. Some of the verses in this vein, for example, فَاسْأَلُوا أَهْلَ الذِّكْرِ إِن كُنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Ask the people of dhikr. Now, dhikr here may mean people of previous books, people of knowledge, people of remembrance, people of insight, whatever. If you don't know something, go and ask. Ask them. And also, as an institution, of course, we can haphazardly just, it may happen that we don't know something, we go and ask someone to tell us about it. However, Quran is advising us to create an institution by which people who do not have the time, do not have the opportunity to learn deeper, to create an institution that some members of our society go and learn and others refer to them, is quite rational. This is not imitation. This is, of course, we may call this taqlid or imitation. However, it is a rational practice in all human societies that certain people go deeper into certain parts of knowledge and science, and we go and ask them. A physician has deeper knowledge in medicine, for example. However, if they want, for example, a psychologist, they have to refer someone who knows psychology. In the same way, the psychologist or the chemist or the mathematician, if they need the doctor, they have to refer to physicians. This is a natural sort of practice among us. The Quran tells us in religion also you have to create such an institution. You have this institution in every aspect of your life. Why not in religion? You should have the same institution in religion as well. At the end of Surah, towards the end of Surah Tawbah, I think it's verse number 122, it says, وَمَا كَانَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ لِيَنْفِرُوا كَافَّةً. It is not possible for mu'mineen, all of them, to go and learn knowledge. This is according to one explanation of this sentence. وَمَا كَانَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ لِيَنْفِرُوا كَافَّةً. فَلَوْلَا نَفَرَ مِنْ كُلِّ فِرْقَةٍ مِنْهُمْ طَائِفَةٌ لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ وَلِيُنذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ إِذَا رَجَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَحْذَرُونَ. So why not from every community a group of them, a number of them who are more talented or more interested, they go لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ, to learn deen deeper. Now this deen may mean any aspect of deen, theology, fiqh or jurisprudence, Quran, any aspect of deen. A group from every society should go and learn this deeper and come and warn others. Warn others, لِيُنذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ. Warning about what? Warning that you have to do this, you have not to do this. This is warning, isn't it? If you want to follow religion, this is the way to do it. If you want to follow Quran, this is what the Quran says. So, فَلَوْلَا نَفَرَ مِنْ كُلِّ فِرْقَةٌ مِّنْهُمْ طَائِفَةٌ لَيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ, to go and learn deen deeper, وَلَيُنذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ, and when they come back, they warn their people, لَعَلَّهُمْ يَحْذَرُونَ إِذَا رَجَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَحْذَرُونَ, when they return to them, they warn them so that they may take heed. They may take heed of course, the rules of religion. So, this type of reference to people of higher knowledge, this is what is usually we have called taqlid. As I said, it may not be the best word to use in this sense, because as I said, taqlid usually is a reprehensible sort of thing. It's imitating others without knowledge. However, they have chosen this word because probably there is no better word describing this sort of reference. And then there may be one reason why this is called taqlid in our, of course, in the Shia jurisprudence, why it's called taqlid. Because, for example, when you refer to a doctor or a psychologist or a mathematician to learn something from them, you are not said that you are imitating them. Why? Because they may not practice that at all, because they may not need it at all. A physician, a doctor, may not need to practice his knowledge of medicine or her knowledge of medicine on herself or himself at all, or on her family, or his family. The need may not come at all. So you do not imitate them. You just listen to them and get knowledge from them. You get advice from them. However, in Sharia, the person who advises you should be a practicing person as well. You cannot go to someone who does not practice fiqh and ask, how should I do my salat? He said, okay, I do not practice salat, I do not do my worship, but this is the way to do it. He never does that. No one ever does that. So, the person who advises you should practice that in the same way, to the best of their knowledge. That's why we say we imitate them. That's why probably the word taqlid is chosen. Of course, they have given other explanations for the word taqlid as well. However, why we use this word, which is a bit reprehensible, a bit awkward in a sense, why we use it is probably because of this reason. We want to follow someone in their knowledge who they practice. This is how religion, faith works. You do not seek advice from someone who is not practicing themselves, who do not believe themselves. Otherwise, you could have chosen the most talented, for example, atheist person and send them to learn fiqh and tell you what is the Islamic fiqh about. You never do that. No matter how talented they are, you never do that. You want to follow someone who is practicing themselves. So, this is why we call it imitation or taqlid. As I said, because it is sometimes confused with that type of reprehensible taqlid, imitation out of ignorance. This is imitation out of referring to the more knowledgeable. That taqlid is imitation out of ignorance, out of tradition, out of just stubbornness or stagnation in one's traditions or ideas. That is what is condemned in the Quran. The other one is a human institution. There is no other choice. We have no other choice. Now, those who we had in the history of Shi'i fiqh, people called Akhbaris, they tried to provide an alternative for this institution of Ijtihad and Taqlid. However, they didn't come with something which could replace this institution. I mean, every human institution may have its own shortcomings, may have its own defects. However, when we criticize that institution,
we have to think what alternative we are going to suggest for it. No one has ever come up with a better alternative in the Shi'i jurisprudence than this institution of Ijtihad and Taqlid, which is based on the verse of the Quran, that from every group of you, some people should go and learn religion deeper and other people should refer to them. This institution, if we can find a better way of creating this institution or rectifying this institution, of course, by all means, because this is something rational, this is not something based on ignorance, it's something based on reason, it's something based on rational practice. Therefore, if there is any better alternative, certainly we look for that and we think about it. However, as I said, those Akhbaris who say that we do not want to follow one person or follow certain jurists, they haven't come up with a better alternative, because what they say is that everyone refers to the books of Hadith and find out for themselves what is the ruling. Would rational human society ever allow this in any other science? That everyone refers to the books of medicine and find out for themselves what should be prescribed for them? Or everyone refers to the books of chemistry and creates medicine, produce medicine in their houses? No one allows this. But when it comes to religion, because everyone thinks that this is something which is based on imagination, or just we refer to a hadith and find out what the imam says about certain issues, they think that it is possible. They think that this is very superficial. Actually, they think superficially about this institution. So they haven't come up with a better alternative. And even those very respectful akhbaris, respected ulama of Akhbariyun, gradually they became like the maraji' of other Akhbaris. They all refer to them because they had more knowledge. So it's a natural thing. You always refer to someone with more knowledge to practice every aspect of your life. So this is the institution. As I said, every institution has many different aspects, and some aspects may have some shortcomings, but as a human, rational human beings, we always should be in the process of correcting our faults, making up for our shortcomings, rectifying what is wrong, as I said, provided we give a better alternative. We don't want to destroy an institution for a worse alternative. We always want a better alternative. So if there's an alternative, I think our jurists have shown during the history that they are the most rational people, the most accepting sort of scholars to criticism, to listen, to learn how to correct and rectify. So this has been the process. If someone comes with a better idea, a better alternative, of course we will look into that. We are always welcoming good things. But as long as we have not come with a better alternative, rationally we have to follow what is there and has been working for a long time. You cannot say because, for example, the contemporary medicine, the contemporary knowledge of medicine, for example, cannot cure certain diseases, so we just throw it away because it doesn't work in certain areas. Well, if you throw it away, you have wronged yourself, because it works in many other areas. And you don't have an alternative which would give cures for those diseases which this institution cannot cure. So this is always there. Sometimes we hear from here and there, why our scholars, jurists cannot solve this issue of the moon, cannot solve the issue of the Eid. Okay, they cannot solve this issue. Say, supposedly they cannot solve this issue. But what is the alternative? What alternative do you have? How they want to replace, what do you have to replace it with? So when we bring these criticisms to an institution, we always have to have in mind that, do we have an alternative? Or generally, collectively, we have to work to improve what we already have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, very important, interesting, and informative introduction to this particular platform. Let's open up the floor for questions and answers. We'll take one question from the floor, as it were, and one question from the numerous piece of paper that I also received. So let's start off with individuals that actually wish to ask a question in person. Any questions on the floor to begin with? Excellent, so we move on to the paper. It says, is it required in following, the question here says, is it required to follow a merger? Okay, I'll have to rephrase the question so that they make sense. In essence, the question is asking, does one have to follow a jurist that is the most learned? If so, why?
Why? Because we all of us are trying to tune our practice according to the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace be on him. And our way to the Sunnah is just the sources that we have and the sort of apparatus, intellectual apparatus that we have created to deduce the laws from these sources. Now, of course, we want the most knowledgeable person tell us how the Sunnah can be deduced from those sources. That is why our ulama say rationally, it is incumbent upon everyone to follow the most knowledgeable. Why? Because they have a maxim saying that kullu ma hakama bihi al-aql hakama bihi al-shar'. Whatever reason, whatever judgment reason gives about something, the Sharia gives the same judgment as well. Sharia cannot oppose reason and rational understanding. This is why. Now, some people have come and said that, okay, finding the most knowledgeable may be very difficult. And therefore, what is wrong if, for example, we know someone is the most knowledgeable, but we want to follow someone else? It all goes back to what sort of hujjah, proof, you are going to provide for your Lord on the Day of Judgment. That's the most important thing. Because if Allah, you know, we are now following the most knowledgeable, in our best of understanding, the most knowledgeable person. Okay, if Allah tells us, all your salat that you were doing were wrong. Okay, well, they were wrong. Because you mistook the Sunnah. The Sunnah of the Prophet was not this. So why did you do it like this? We say, well, we followed a jurist. They told us we have to do it in this way. They were the most knowledgeable, as to the best of our knowledge, and we followed them. And Allah says, well, that's reasonable. You're right. So I'm not going to punish you. But if we say, well, we follow someone who said he had knowledge, and he may tell us, well, wasn't there anyone more knowledgeable than that person? You say, yes, but I didn't want to follow him. Say, oh, you didn't. Why? Rationally, I gave you intellect, I gave you knowledge, I gave you reason to follow the best way. And the best way was to follow the most knowledgeable. So this is how they say, if we are asked about a proof or a hujjah, we don't have a proof unless we say that we were following the most knowledgeable person or the most knowledgeable group. I mean, this is something that we have to develop gradually. But nowadays, of course, we don't have this group sort of marja'iyya. We have this individual marja'iyya. And when we follow the most knowledgeable person, which gives us the hujjah or proof, there's one hadith. I should have mentioned this in my introduction, actually. Some people are asked on the Day of Judgment, هلا عملتم. Why didn't you practice religion? Why? They say, God, we didn't know. And the answer is, هلا تعلمتم. Why didn't you learn? You did have all those times to learn. You go and learn about many things. Why didn't you learn about your religion, your faith? And then we have no other answer to give them, unless saying that, well, of course, not every human being could go and learn this. Otherwise, the whole human society would have collapsed if everyone wanted to go and become a jurist, who would have attended to other aspects of society. So we follow the most knowledgeable. And that's how we learned it. This is our proof for it.
Thank you very much, Martin. There are many other questions that have come through that appear to be counter questions to the answer that you gave. So I think you'll just very quickly address some of these, because many people don't have an issue with the institution of Manjari or the institution of Tablighi, but where they do have an issue is with its practical application today, or the way some would argue it's very, very rigid and staunch in its application. So one would argue, yes, you would follow the most knowledgeable Marja, but today we all follow numerous Maraja, and therefore it would appear that it's difficult to distinguish as to who the most knowledgeable is, and therefore if there is more than one, why can we not just pick and choose between them in the sense that if I was going to take some medication, there were five pharmacists, all of whom had their own opinion on a certain medication, I'd be able to choose between them because they're all at the same level.
Well, if they're all at the same level, then you can follow any of them. But, I mean, if they're all at the same level, you have the choice to follow any of them. However, picking and choosing is somehow, it gives the sense that you are trying to evade certain duties, isn't it? That's, you say, okay, I follow this marja, but here it's a bit difficult for me. I go to another jurist and refer to him, because then every jurist has a system of thought. It's based on that system of thought that they give the different fatwa. If you want to pick and choose, that means you are actually making a sort of awkward system of fiqh for yourself, based on different systems of thought which have come up with different sort of fatwa on different issues. However, there is one thing I mention here. There are some people, some jurists, who argue that it should be permissible to pick and choose if the maraja are equal in knowledge. If someone you decide is most knowledgeable, then you have to follow him in all respects. If everyone is equal, then you are permissible to follow any of them in any issue you wish. However, these people who say this, they are not at the level of Maraj. That's the point. They are discussing it as yet. They are putting forward the idea that why this is not permissible. Our Marajas say that because this creates a sort of chaos in system of practice, therefore every person should follow one Marja. However, as I said, the possibility has been discussed by some of the jurists. This is what is called, and they have a name for it, they call it talfiq. Talfiq is to mix between things.
I suppose this is the whole argument, in the sense that many would argue, rather than causing chaos, it actually makes life a lot easier, in the sense that if I wanted to exercise proportion and choose the most difficult way forward, I would do it else. But because I'm not doing that, and I am doing tafreed, why do we deem it as difficult, or why do we deem it as being precarious? If I want to make life easier for myself on issues such as moonsighting, for example, or if I, whether or not I can swim during Shahr Ramadan. The argument is that this is a problem. The whole system is a little bit backward as opposed to being forward thinking. Well, yes, if it makes life easier, what's wrong with that?
You see, the whole argument about choosing a marja is that you think that they are the most knowledgeable, okay? But if you think they are the most knowledgeable and then you say because following the other one would make life easier, I follow them, then you are actually arguing against yourself.
If they're at the same level?
If you are at the same level, as I said, there is this issue of talfiq. That, okay, we can mix between the fatawa. As I said, no marja yet says this. Those people who say this are less knowledgeable people, not more knowledgeable people.
Well, one of the other questions that we also have here is that, is it realistic in today's society to be able to define who is the most knowledgeable? Because by virtue of the fact that there is more than one manager and the criterion, number one, maybe you can explain the criterion, but the fact that different people say different things as to who the most knowledgeable is, surely it is therefore more logical to assume that they're all at the same level, and, well, they can choose between them.
If you believe in talfiq, as I said, if you, because none of our maraji have issued a fatwa about this talfiq issue. They say this talfiq is not permissible. As I said, it has been discussed in lower levels in the hawza in religious institutions, but is not accepted by those who we regard to be the most knowledgeable people. Therefore, unless they accept it and they tell us it may one day become the norm, however, as of today, it's not something accepted by those most knowledgeable jurists, as I said.
Let's just very quickly, there's a lot of questions here, all related, I've tried to cover some of them, but let's just open up the floor. Are there anyone who actually wants to ask a question in person, or should we continue with the discussions here? It's very important that you do raise your hand nice and high so I can see it, otherwise I'll just continue on. There is a lot of questions here about Eid and moon sighting, so we're going to leave them towards the end. People are very emotional about this.
Well, Eid is already passed.
We'll deal with that very shortly. But is there a question over there? Yeah.
Alaykum salam. Rationally, this should be the way that we have to practice it. I mean, because the whole issue of marja'iyyah is based on a rational argument that you follow the most knowledgeable. Now, this has been discussed in religious institutions for a long time, several decades. People are discussing this, that we should have. Specialized people in different specialist fields of jurisprudence, because nowadays it's very difficult for one person to be a specialist in all areas, economics for example, and then bioethics for example, and then in fields of medical issues related to jurisprudence. So they have put forward the argument. So it is not something which we cannot foresee that would happen in future very soon. However, we yet have not created the infrastructure for this in our religious institutions to specialize people, to specialize jurists on different issues and different aspects. And usually they say this ability of ijtihad, they call it malaka, ability of ijtihad. Usually it is not divisible. When someone has that ability, and if the ability is higher than others, then they can use it in every field. However, this is arguable. We can say that although some people may have higher talent for ijtihad, however, they may not have the time to go deeper into certain aspects which may other people with less talents have spent lots of time and they have come with better fatawa. If we know, this is a rational sort of argument, if we know that there are certain jurists who are more knowledgeable than others in certain fields, then we may argue that yes, we have to somehow divide between our following, our marja'iyyah, that we follow this marja in this respect and the other marja in other respect. However, this, as I said, this has not been institutionalized yet. It's just an idea yet. And soon, I'm sure, it will become institutionalized one day, because the modern world
requires this sort of specialization. Unless that time comes, we have to stick with what we have. And this is, as I said, this is very important. Hypothetical issues should not hinder us from following what we practically have at the moment. It's yet a hypothetical discussion. We have to follow what we have practically at the moment until that day comes when the jurists themselves say that if you want to follow someone in the field of economy, for example, follow this person. If you want to follow someone in the field of medicine, follow that person. I mean, medicine related to jurisprudence. And that, of course, as well, should come from people with authoritative knowledge. That's very important as well. So we have to wait for that day.
So it's not a personal choice. We have to wait for the authority to give us a
warning. No, authority, I mean authoritative knowledge. Someone who has the knowledge of an authoritative knowledge, a knowledge which we know comes from good reason, good sources, to tell us that this person, for example, is best to be followed in this field. As I said, now the jurists yet do not think that this is something that could be divisible. As I said, we have to wait for that time to come.
What about the, sorry, I just want to have several questions here that I need to address. What about a situation where an individual, let me give an example of gelatin. There are some jurists that maybe it undergoes chemical change, others would believe it doesn't. Now, if I'm a chemist myself, say I have a PhD, and my own view, based on my own research, I'm not a Muslim here, I'm not a Moja, but I know this field inside out, I've done research into it, and I disagree with my Moja by virtue of my profession, what would be the position there?
You disagree with the Marja based on the fact that you think that Marja has wrong information, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, based on the fact that, based on my knowledge as a chemist and based on my research, yes, the information that the Marja has is incorrect, and also the fact that there are other opinions out there, but fundamentally I believe that in this topic, because it's my field and I've studied it, I believe, for the sake of argument, that gelatin undergoes chemical change. So, where do I stand in the scheme of...
You see, as I said, this has two sides. One side is the information and knowledge, which is your special field. The other side is the knowledge of jurisprudence and religion, isn't it? So, that is what the jurists have, and this is what you have. You have to feed that... Either you have to go and learn that aspect as well and then come up with your own idea about it.
Would you be able to do that?
We are told that if you can do ijtihad on an issue, you are not allowed to follow anyone else. Okay? So if you can make sure that you are quite competent in that field of jurisprudence to find the religious aspect of it, as well as other specialist knowledge that you have, then you make your own ijtihad. However, you have to make sure that the knowledge you gain in that field is sufficient for this. You know the sources, you know the methods, you know the usul and all these things. Otherwise, what you do, you go to the jurist and say that you are given wrong information. This is the right information. And this is what has happened in the history. Say, for example, the tuna fish, for example. Yeah. The jurist thought that it has no scale. Then the biologists went to them and said, this is the information, this fish has a scale which is quite small, not visible by ordinary eye. So the jurists accepted and they changed the fatwa about it. So if we do not have that capability of the other side, which is the jurisprudential side, we have to feed the information to them. Otherwise, if we can get that side as well, we make our own shot.
I just want to go back a few steps and seek some clarification.
Sure.
And also make a counter-argument. And just make a counter-argument. And in days gone by, let's say 100 years ago, when we didn't have the global technology, then you would argue, and I'm assuming, that you didn't have accessibility to your merger. So you would probably follow the most alim of a merger in your vicinity. There, now with all the global technology, Shouldn't there be an argument in the case for you to be able to follow based on a shura, based on the order merger, you know who is the most alim, and even if they do not agree, they can agree to have one of them as the most highest authority, and he would have his team around him.
Right. Okay. And then second, did you have another point? Is that plausible?
Having a group of marajas,
I think we have two different sorts of suggestions here. One is the shura of marja'iyya, and the other is one marja with a team of consultants. Which one do you mean? I mean, which one is the suggestion that you have?
Because we have so many issues of people following different marja on certain issues like Eid or moon sighting, if everyone agrees, then there will be less disunity. So is it not possible in this age and era to be able to follow all the mukallafin, follow just one marja? That's my argument. Just one, not 10.
This institution of marja'iyya, the way we have it today, it wouldn't allow it. No. Why? Because this institution says that every person, every individual is allowed and is encouraged. If they have the talent and time and interest, they are encouraged to go and learn and make ijtihad and become the most knowledgeable person. And you see, in every field you find people who think that they know these better than others. Not based on pride or other things or prejudice, based on the knowledge that they have acquired, they may think that others are wrong. Other people are wrong in their understanding. This is the right understanding. And if this is the case, they are not allowed to follow them. They are not allowed to agree with them, because they say that based on my knowledge, my understanding, they are wrong. And if I think that they are wrong, how can I follow them? How can I agree with them? So this sort of institution, these premises which support this institution would not allow us to somehow force one opinion to the scholars of this institution. And I think it's good. Why should we force one opinion? It's through all these different opinions that this knowledge moves forward and grows, actually. However, then it brings this practical problem that, okay, this unity, who should we follow, we may be able to find practical ways for this, instead of not letting people to find out for themselves and to have their own opinions. This idea of shura has been suggested by many clerics before. In Iran, in Qom, it has been suggested by some very famous clerics that why don't we make a shura of marja'iyya? But it hasn't worked practically. The idea of jurists having consultants is nowadays actually practiced in many buyut of maraj. They have the consultants in different areas. And it's good, it should be somehow developed further. It should be propped up. It should be encouraged that the ulama, the maraji, have more consultants on different issues. So that when they make a decision and they make a fatwa about something, they are sure that they are not issuing the fatwa based on wrong information. That is very important, of course.
Has it been proactively being addressed?
It is proactively addressed. On social level, I know that in Iranian constitution, it has become institutionalized, that a group of consultants advise the jurists to issue fatwa on social matters. And this is something which is in process of even further development.
Sure. Are there any other questions from the floor before we carry on with the questions received through the papers? And I think the sister at the back had an additional question. Do you have an additional question? So we'll take that now, and then we can carry on.
At the moment, we see that all the marja are in the Middle East. So the
are in where, sorry?
In the Middle East,
okay. Usually, as far as I know, the maraji allow quite a remarkable portion of homes to be spent locally. So when the homes is collected, the wakala of maraji don't send all the homes to the Middle East, so to speak. They don't send it to marja. They keep a considerable portion in the area and spend it in the area. And some portion is sent to marja, and that portion which is sent to marja is mainly used for the institution of education, of teaching and learning religious knowledge in different fields, in different aspects, and that is very important as well. I mean, whole the world should support this institution because it's from there where this knowledge comes out. So a portion is even in the UK here, we see sometimes 2/3 of the homes is spent locally and 1/3 is sent to the marja. Sometimes half is the case. So that portion which is sent to the marja, it is usually not used for local needs of the area. It's used for this institution of education, for Hausa, so to speak. And that's very important, I suppose.
Right. Any other questions before we one of the questions here is, what actually happens when your merger passes away? And indeed, can you follow a merger that you believe to be the most knowledgeable, but he's not alive?
He's not alive?
He's not alive, so he was seen to be, say Al-Hui, for example, or someone who is seen to be a very important authority, but the traditional argument is, well, because, perhaps he lived before you were born, you're unable to follow his jurisprudential rulings.
So why don't we follow Sheikh Tusi? Why Ayatollah Khoi?
I would say, well, why not?
Yeah, Sheikh Tusi, who lived 1,000 years ago, why shouldn't we follow him? The whole idea is that the marja is there to address the issues which come up day by day to day. And we follow him and in other issues, mainly, of course, because we think that if any issue comes up, we can refer to him quickly. If someone has passed away, a marja, of course, for the practical ease, we can continue following him. But if a new issue comes up, what should we do? We have to refer to another marja.
In that case, for example, because again, this is, I suppose, one of the issues that people have is that the system is far too rigid. So, if, for example, say Al-Hui had actually ruled, or said Sheikh Al-Tusi had ruled on several issues, then we can follow either of the two. But if the example is such, there's a new issue that neither of them have ruled on, then we have a merger that we can follow for the new issues. Because what's the difference between that and continuing to follow someone who has passed away? Surely it's exactly the same. Where's the difference?
You see, again, this comes with the idea of talfiq, that you mix between maraja. You see, when a maraja passes away, we are told that you can remain in the taqlid of that maraja based on the fatwa of a living marja. Why? Because the most important thing is that a living marja should be there for reference of issues which come up day to day. And we have to know, okay, if something comes up, who should we refer to? That's how the institution is.
But at the moment, okay, friend, so if I'm saying for the sake of argument, my fellow Sayyid Al-Khoi, and Sayyid Sistani, Sayyid Al-Khoi has passed away, so for all the new issues, my fellow Sayyid Sistani, that's presumably the argument that you're making. But let's agree for the sake of argument that I'm new to Islam and I need to choose a marja. So I follow Sayyid al-Bui, but I also follow Sayyid al-Sistani on all the new issues. Where is the difference in the two?
Well, the difference is that the whole institution of marja'iyya is also a political issue as well. It's the issue of leadership. You cannot say that I follow a dead leader. It has a jurisprudential aspect and it has a political and social aspect as well.
So if that's the case, when Sayyid al-Bui passes away, why even follow him at all? And this is just as an example.
As I said, it's just for ease.
Why not just stop?
It's just for, just for ease of practice. You see, it's allowed so that it doesn't complicate the life. Otherwise, for example, usually the marajah are old. Sometimes few marajah die in course of, say, for example, 10 years. You have to switch from one marajah to the other several times, four times, five times, for example. Then the life would be very difficult if you want to go and learn the whole masail of the living marajah afresh. So for ease of practice, say, okay, you can continue with that, if your marja allows it, if your living marja allows it, and then gradually you switch to for the contemporary issues you refer to the living marja. However, as I said, the most important thing is that marja'iyya has a jurisprudential aspect to it. It has a social aspect to it as well. And if all of us want to follow a dead leader, then of course, if an issue arises, how are we going to act?
There are several questions that have come up in relation to this issue where there is a feeling that the marajah are a bit disconnected from Muslims living in the West, and therefore, because they are where they are, I suppose, as I just pointed out, many of the marajah are in the Middle East, therefore, do they really know or understand, appreciate, and acknowledge some of the problems that Muslims in the West face? And surely we should also be proactively pursuing, trying to build up over maybe the next 100 years or so, marajah that actually live in the West.
I think this issue of marajah being disconnected is a bit exaggerated, because we see that people from different areas of the world go to their marja and they inform them of their problems, and they are quite aware of that. There are certain issues which are very difficult to solve, you see. Like, for example, the issue of fasting in Scandinavia in summer, you see. It's something that marja cannot come up with a sort of unified answer to it. Whether they live there or they live in the Middle East, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, let's look at some of the new fatwa which has come up. That, for example, while you are there, you can fast in summer according to the timing of certain cities, for example, Mecca or Karbala or Qom or whatever. Or you do a maximum of 16 hours. We may not agree with these fatwa, however, or our marajah may not agree with this fatwa. However, this shows that they are aware of these difficulties. They are aware of these problems. They are aware of the difficulty of moonsighting here in the UK, as one of the main concerns usually is not moonsighting in Iraq or Iran, it's moonsighting in Scandinavia and in London. So I think this is a bit exaggerated, because information, we have a system of flow of information or conveyance of information which doesn't require a person to live in an area. We have many people living in the West, they are quite unaware of the issues here, much less than certain people living in the Middle East who are aware of the issues which are here, and vice versa. I mean, there are many people who are quite aware of what is happening in the Middle East, and they are living in the West better than people who are living there. I don't think this is a real problem.
Sure. Any other questions for other gentlemen? Let's just wait for the mic to come round.
I was wondering about the question regarding verses. Some people say it's a
You see, if you ask people who's the best man in the world, they come up with many, many answers, isn't it? Or if you ask who's the most knowledgeable, then the choices would become more limited. However, it's impossible almost that people all agree on one person to be the most knowledgeable in every field. I mean, if you ask who's the most knowledgeable in physics or in chemistry, people come with different views and opinions based on their knowledge, on their information, on the data that they have. And therefore, it is left to individuals really to rely on their sources who tell them who's the most knowledgeable.
Any other questions on the floor? Okay, right, so we move on to something. Since you did mention moon sighting, it seems to be an already popular topic. So can we just briefly address it in the sense that many individuals highlight the fact that the system at the moment is not working as efficiently and as speedily as it should because of this moon sighting controversy during Shah Ramadan, where potentially father and mother could be doing an Eid and their sons and daughters could be fasting. That's an awfully disturbing situation. How can we remedy it?
I think this issue of moon sighting is more a problem of the ignorance of the followers than the maraji. We think that we have to force one unified opinion to our maraji about this issue. You see, these differences are based on different understanding of the traditions. You cannot force it to them. Just let me give you one example. The opinion of Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani with regards to the moon sighting is almost identical in the sense that it should be locally visible, as against the opinion of Ayatollah Khoi, that he believes, based on many arguments which he has provided, he believes that if the moon is sighted in one place in the world, then the Eid should be declared for everyone around the world. Okay? Now, this is opinion. How can you argue with him saying that because you create differences, you have to give up this opinion? He says, well, this is what I understand. Do you want me to give you wrong opinion about this moon sighting issue? This is what I understand. If you want to follow me, this is my understanding, that if moon is sighted in one place in the world, everywhere is Eid. Now, Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani have a completely different view. They say no. According to what we understand from traditions, the moon should be sighted locally. So if it is sighted, say for example, in another locality which doesn't have the common horizon with your location, then you cannot have Eid. And in the past, we know even in Makkah and Medina, Eid was declared in two different days. However, people were not aware of it. Why? Because they didn't have this means of communication. Later, they became aware that yes, people in Mecca, for example, had their moon sighting in a different day. Now, so they have this opinion that it should be sighted locally. However, again comes another difference here. Ayatollah Sistani says, according to what I understand from all these traditions, is that ordinary people with ordinary eye, with naked eye, should be able to view the moon. That means the moon should have risen to a point where ordinary eye can see it. Ayatollah Khamenei says sighting is sighting. So even if you can sight it with telescope, it doesn't make any difference. This is what I understand, okay? So the problem comes. Like just the Eid that some of us had here, that the moon was visible by telescope on a day, but not by a naked eye. So the followers of Ayatollah Khamenei had Eid on one day and Ayatollah Sistani on the other day. Okay, you want to say that the system is inefficient because people have these different opinions. I would say that it's our ignorance of the system that we think that is inefficient. This is the whole beauty of this system, that people can give their own opinions, and gradually, if one argument prevails over other, over time, then it becomes the best opinion, the most informed opinion, so to speak. However, with regards to this, we have one solution, one solution that we can work on that, and that is the solution of Hakim al-Shara, that no marja would actually give any information with regards to moon sighting and leave it to Hakim al-Shara, to one marja, to talk about it. This, we have to work on this probably. However, I don't think this is inefficiency of the institution. And even if it is, inefficient, give us a better alternative. It's always the answer. Give us a better alternative. What is your better alternative? You may say, okay, we force one hit on everyone with disregard to all the information and other things, which is not viable.
So then people complain about being forced, but
Sister, did you have a question?
Sure, let's just wait for the mic to come and I'll get to yourself.
This is a very new concept for me, so I'm still learning. But first of all, I'd like to learn how many groups are out there. I think there's six major groups out there, with six leaders. Is that right? Like six of these institutions.
Six
major.
Marja.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. How many maraja
are there? What I've heard is that there's, for example, if it's six major and have six leaders, their followers tend to fight.
Sorry, you're not confused. The institution is the whole institution of learning and education, and then coming to the level of ijtihad and then issuing fatwa. This is the institution. This institution produced several maraja. So we have one institution. This institution has produced several knowledgeable people who people, others think that they can follow them. So,
what I fail to understand is that if these people have so much knowledge, if they're so wise, why are they not bringing people together? Why is there so much indifference and separation? And also for a person like me who does not know anyone, then what would you suggest? How do I pick one? Should I do my research and maybe probably listen to all of them and then come to a conclusion, or should I just sit and watch and maybe? Because this sounds confusing to me. Like, how do I pick one? Which one's better?
Sure. So there's a couple of questions there. But the first issue is how does one choose a moja? And the second question is, I suppose we could use moon sighting as an example, but that surely if different maraja are aware of the confusion which is being created, why can they not, amongst themselves, try and come up with a solution that would prevent what a lot of individuals have questioned as conflict within communities?
I don't know why we should think this is a conflict. I don't really understand why this should be a conflict, an issue of conflict or probably trouble in the community. I mean, you believe that the best opinion is what that marja gives about the moon. Okay, I follow that, and this is my Eid. And other people think differently. I don't know why should we think there's this conflict here. I mean, in Ahl Sunnah, we have the same problem as well, different moon sighting. And sometimes when you want to unify people on something, then you are forcing wrong opinions on them. And people may say that, well, I may follow this, but I'm not convinced that this is the best opinion or this is the best way to go about it. Now, with regards to choosing a marja, you know, there are several ways. First of all, if you have the ability, the talent, and the opportunity to go and learn yourself, you're not allowed to follow anyone. You have to do it yourself. You have to learn this knowledge. You have to become a mujtahid. Even if you are not a marja, but if you are a mujtahid and no one follows you, you should follow yourself. You cannot follow anyone else's opinion. Why? Because if you have made research and you have found out something, as the research you mentioned about that specialist issue, if you have made research, then on the day of judgment, if God asks you, why did you do it this way? You say, although I knew that this was right, but I followed someone else. Well, this is not the right argument. If you have the possibility of getting knowledge yourself, you have to do it. So, a mujtahid, there's a difference between mujtahid and marja. Mujtahid is someone who has the knowledge, can infer the rulings from the sources. However, no one deems them to be the most knowledgeable. No one follows them. No problem. I may be a mujtahid myself, Although I'm not a mushrik, but I may be a mushrik myself. I follow myself in everything, and people follow the marajah. I am not allowed to follow a marajah if I'm a mushrik. Although my opinions may be different from all marajah, I am not allowed. So this is one thing. The second thing is that if you cannot do that, you have to find someone to whom you could refer. However, in every science, this is the human aspect, this is human nature. Every science you have people with different opinions. Because people have different approaches, different understandings. So in this science of jurisprudence, you have people with different opinions. So you cannot have everyone agreeing on one set of ideas or rulings of Sharia. You always have these different people. Sometimes it happens that everyone agrees that there is one person who is the most knowledgeable, like at the time of Ayatollah Burujerdi, for example. Everyone agreed that he's the magic. Everyone followed him. Then after him, there were different people. Sometimes this unanimity cannot be reached. So you have to follow different people. Now, to find out how to choose a barja, you have several options before you. First is that you have that sort of knowledge that you can discern and distinguish and say this is more knowledgeable than that. Not based on ease, but based on knowledge. Of course, most of us don't have that knowledge. Majority don't have. So we have to refer to experts. The experts are those who have this knowledge, but they are not maraji. Okay? They may be mushtahids, they may be other scholars. They tell us who's the most knowledgeable. Depending on who do we rely in this field, we ask them. And they may introduce someone to us and saying, according to me, these two people are equal. You can follow anyone who you like, or one of them is more knowledgeable than the other, and you follow them. What happened after the demise of great Ayatollahs in Qum and Najaf? For example, there was a shura in Qum, the shura of the academics of the Hawza. There's a shura of academics called the Hawza. They introduced seven people. And they said these seven people are knowledgeable and could be followed according to our understanding, but we do not give any preference. You have to choose among them. This usually happens. The academics of Hawza would tell you who may be the most knowledgeable. So these are the ways that options that we have in front of us.
All right, so we'll just take one more question. I'm gonna get to this one. There's another question. Yeah, then I'll get this up. Go ahead.
So can we summarize it like, if I have personal knowledge of some certain aspect, and I'm very much convinced that I should do this instead of following a matcha, then I can proceed, I can continue following this. But on other matters, I might be convinced by one matcha, and for a different matter, I can follow another matcha, if I'm convinced that that matcha I should follow.
Okay, so can we just get your question as well? Do you have a question?
Yes. In fact, if you allow me, I have two questions.
Right, very good.
I don't labor the point too much, but you partly answered the Sheikh Mahmoud the question from the last question you raised. But this issue about ignorance of the people, I quite agree. It is the ignorance of people. However, we've been told and advised that we must sit and eat together. So surely Eid is such an important day, and we have been talking for 30 days, 29 days Ramadan, issue of moon sighting. I just feel that I'm not convinced that this issue is perceived, that it's a perception that it's not being addressed and doesn't deserve a lot more emphasis. And that's my first question. Second question is...
Sorry, just before I forget this, you give me a solution. What should Ayatollah Khoi and Khamenei and Sistani do? You tell me.
I'm suggesting that they should give a solution to us.
No. Because you say this is a problem, okay? Ayatollah Sistani was asked The problem was conveyed to him, and he was told that, look, there is division in families, and children and parents, they have to have Eid on different days, and all these things. And he said, well, it's diversity. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay, he thought in this way. Now, I explained the basis for these differences. Ayatollah Khomeini says, according to sources, I believe that if moon is sighted in one place in the world, everywhere is Eid. Ayatollah Khomeini and Sistani say that it should be sighted locally. However, one say that with telescope is acceptable, the other say without telescope should be seen without telescope. Now, this is their firm belief based on sources. You tell me, what should they do?
Sure, well, we've now unfortunately run out of time, so I suppose if we just end with this question, just to summarize, and I suppose your question very neatly summarizes the discussion, which is, what are the different options available for an individual to decipher jurisprudential rulings, such as a sister over there, for example, who doesn't have to pay that present? But what are the different avenues that one can pursue? So you've got following the most learned, and any other options that are available.
Well, the best way is to become mujtahid yourself. I mean, that's the best way. So you don't have the hassle of following a manager, okay? You become mujtahid, you follow your own opinion. As our brother said, if you become mujtahid in certain issues that you think that this is the right opinion in that issue. However, this shouldn't be based on imagination or based on, for example, we think that this should be this way. We have to have a sort of knowledge which is acceptable to the specialists of the field. This is very important. In every science, when you say that someone is knowledgeable, it means the knowledge is approved by the specialists of the field. Although the opinion may differ, however, the way this opinion has been reached should be based on approved and acceptable standards of that science and knowledge. Therefore, yes, if our opinion on a fiqh issue is based on an approved standards of that system of knowledge, then we follow our own opinion, okay? Otherwise, we have to follow the most knowledgeable. Now, can we mix between maraji? This is something, as I said, the maraji up till now have not allowed. They say you have to follow one maraji. Although, hypothetically, it has been discussed by many scholars that we have to foresee a day when people can mix between maraji, when people can even mix between the deceased scholars and the living scholars, despite the fact that they should have someone as the leader as well. They can. These are hypothetical issues. As I said, up till this moment that we are sitting here, the great maraji, they all say that you have to follow one marja. Hypothetically, we can foresee that day, but this is what we are in as now.
What I'd like to say is, if I am forced to follow one, and again, it refers back to the issues that one is forced to follow someone, even he thinks beyond that issue, he should have followed that.
You see, this issue is not based on force at all. I mean, it's between you and your God, isn't it? It's just between you and your God. So it's not based on force, it's based on argument. That they argue that if someone has that talent and ability of ijtihad, if that talent is more than someone else's talent, then in every issue that person is more knowledgeable. Okay? So you have to follow them. This may be disputable, as I said, but so far the maraji are saying this. In future, this may be an alternative. As I said, we have to always look for better alternatives rather than for destroying things without suggesting a better alternative.
Well, there is one issue that did come to mind, and this is, I know we're running out of time, but this is a very important issue just to avoid confusion. Sister Sainz Salah, first page, it says following mujtahid, and here he says, if one generally knows that the verdicts of mujtahids do vary in day-to-day matters, and and also that some of the mujtahids are more capable than the others, but he is unable to identify the most learned one, then he should act in proportion based on their verdicts. And if he is unable to act in proportion, then he should follow a mujtahid he supposes to be the most learned. And if he decides that they're all of equal stature, then he has a choice.
To follow any of them.
To follow any of them. So is it actually a new idea? Because when you said that the Maraja haven't actually espoused this idea, is that not what is being suggested here?
No, that precaution, I do not advise any of you to act on.
But not the precaution, it's precaution. Said, and if he decides that they are all of equal stature, then he has a choice.
Yeah, and that this, I think we mentioned that, that if everyone is equal, not choice of picking and choosing,
okay,
choice of choosing one of them as the marja. So this is the traditional old view as well.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Brothers, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That very neatly concludes this evening's discussion. Obviously, you can email amislam@amislam.com with any feedback, comments, criticisms. There shall be many more platforms of this nature. Of course, thank you to our speaker, Sheikh Muhammad Saeed Bahmanpour, for his time this evening. Thank you all for attending. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.